Welcome to Meet the People of MCB with Chip Haley and Denny Huff. Brought to you by the Missouri Council of the Blind. Now, let's meet the people. Welcome to this, another edition of Meet the People of MCB. I'm Denny Huff.
And I'm Chip Haley. And want to welcome you to another fabulous edition of Meet the People of MCB.
Today we have as our guest, none other than Madam President of the Missouri Council of the Blind, Naomi Sewell. How you doing, Naomi?
Great. Thank you for having me.
You bet. We're been wanting to have you for quite a while and just couldn't work it out, but we got you now, and we're going to find out some good stuff about Naomi Sewell.
Okay.
So, how did your vision? You're totally blind?
Yes.
And go ahead.
I was premature, 10 weeks premature, and back in 1956, a lot of babies who were born, who were premature, have this eye condition called retinitis of prematurity, which is what I had. So I am totally blind in my left eye. And my right eye, I did have some vision. And so I did learn to read print and write print using dark lined paper, and also learned to cursive write. And then I started getting a cataract on my right eye when I was going into third grade, actually when I was in second grade. And it was suggested that I learn Braille. So my family has lived all over the country, and so we moved at the time to Dayton, Ohio from San Antonio. And so I was put in a resource room and learned Braille. And then when I was in fourth grade, my parents were able to get me into my neighborhood school. So every time we'd move, I had to go through this whole process about getting into my own school. And so anyway, I was in part of fourth and fifth grade in my own school, my public school near my house. And then cataracts started getting worse, really. And, you know, so I was using Braille and everything. And when we lived in Des Moines, we moved to Des Moines, and I had to go to a special school, which was a school where all the kids with disabilities attended. And I will say that my dad was really good at, you know, putting a positive spin on whatever I had to do. And I will say that I learned a lot going there for 3 months. And then I was in my neighborhood school, of course. And anyway, so when we moved to St. Louis in 1968, in the summer of 68, and my mom is originally from here. So she told my dad that this was it, that we were not moving again. And anyway, so I had surgery on my right eye because I found an eye doctor here who felt that he could take the cataract out, which he did. And so my vision was restored to 20/300. And I used a contact lens, and it was great. I could see, you know, I loved art. So I was able to see, you know, pretty well for me. I mean, I knew nothing more than what I had. And then when I was in between my sophomore and junior year of college, I was home between semesters and I was watching TV. My parents were out of town and I saw these flashes. Well, I used to get migraines, so I thought, oh, it's an aura. Okay. And I did have a little bit of a headache. Well, the next morning I woke up and I couldn't see. And so my parents came home and I thought, well, maybe my contact lens was scratched. Maybe I need to look at find my spare one. So of course that wasn't the case. And so my doctor was like, get your butt in here right now. I don't care what day it is. And so it was clear that I couldn't see and I had all these tests done and, you know, everything. Went back to college 3 weeks later and flew home every 2 weeks to go get my eyes checked again because I was on medication. I don't know. But of course, nothing worked. And so I came home over Christmas and my parents wanted to know if I'd go see a retina specialist in WashU. And I said, no, I'm done. You know, I'm done. Well, I ended up going to see the retina specialist. And of course, he said, well, we might be able to help you. And so I had to take off 6 weeks for my second semester of college. And of course, I was lying on the operating room table. And I just knew this was not going to work in my heart. Mm-hmm. I knew. And sure enough, they opened me up, looked in and said there was too much damage and closed me right back up. So I have been totally blind since then. And so I'm glad that I can still remember color. Yeah. I think I'm a visual thinker and I think of things visually.
Right.
And so that's what happened.
You know, Naomi, did you experience any kind of, did you go through the emotional kind of things like anger or, you know, any of those kind of emotional traumas that some people go through when they first initially lose their sight?
I would say that I didn't until after the surgery. And the reason I would say that is because I knew, I felt like I'd wasted a bunch of my time. And so when I did go back to school, when I went to KU, and when I did go back, I was angry, okay, because I'd lost 6 weeks of school, but I was able to do independent studies. My professors were great. And I was angry. And so I had a friend that we were good friends, and we went out for dinner one night, and he said, and he told me, you know, you were acting like a real brat, blah, 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 blah. Well, I let him have it, you know, and I said, you have no clue, you know, you know, what was going on. And so, yeah, I'm going to say it maybe took me a year to settle down. You know, people would ask me about my vision and, you know, I would get real teary when I, you know, told the story. And so, yeah, I would say yes at that time.
You know, you mentioned about being thankful that you were able to, you know, see your colors and everything. That's a question that I've been asked several times. Would you have rather lost your sight later in life or been born blind? And
no.
I have to say that I would. I'm glad that I had sight for a while.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Even though I didn't, you know, those that are born blind can read Braille like crazy, but you can read Braille pretty good too, Naomi.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
Well, I learned in third grade, you know, mm-hmm. So I had that skill.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, so I was lucky. The thing that was really a good thing for me was, I already knew how to use a cane. I already knew Braille. when I lost my vision, I already knew what I needed, you know.
Right.
And, you know, in fact, I saw my, went down to the Bureau for the Blind, as it was called back then. And I said, here's, you know, here's what happened and here's what I need. And I'm going to go back to school. And so I was lucky that, to have all those skills.
Yeah.
If I hadn't, I think that we would, I think things would have been a lot different.
Right. Chip?
Yeah, you were talking there, and that was going to be a question I had for you. Here now, you are in college, and now that you've completely lost your sight, all the remaining portion of your sight. So did you have to go anywhere to learn any additional skills? You mentioned that you already learned Braille, you already had your cane skills. But to continue on with your college career, did you have to go anywhere to learn any additional skills, blindness skills?
No, they were, it was not suggested to me. I knew nothing about anything like that. And, no, because again, I did what I did do when I was in junior high is, the Missouri School for the Blind had a program, a summer program. And I went, I was in that program 2 summers. And that's where I learned my, got my mobility skills and other skills. So, no.
So did you continue on at KU?
Yes, I did.
Yeah. So, so you are a big KU Jayhawks fan. Is that correct?
I hear about it all the time.
So how was it for you? Were you one of the very few at that time that was visually impaired attending a big university like KU?
I don't know. One thing I will tell you is that until I became involved with ACB, I really didn't know many blind people. And I remember meeting one person, and he was trying to get me to join the NFB. And I had not heard of ACB even. So at that point, I was not interested in anything, you know. In joining anything. And so I really don't know.
So when did you?
I know.
Yeah, when did you become a part of ACB or MCB?
Well, when I was 25, well, let me think about this. Yes. When I was 25, ACB had their convention at the Chase Park Plaza in St. Louis. And I was friends with Jenny Ekus, and wonderful woman, and wonderful friend. And she told me about ACB and said I should go. And I thought, okay, I'll go. And I did. And, you know, I had a, it was a really interesting experience to go to that. But I did meet some great people. And anyway, Durwood McDaniel, of course, and I was just lucky to be there. And so then I went through the exhibit area, of course, and I met someone from IBM who Danny and I both know, Lowell Newsom. And he was working the IBM booth, and I had my resume with me, and I talked to him. And he called me the next day and said, I was really impressed with you. Would be, you be interested in working for IBM? And I said, well, sure. So anyway, IBM was very involved with ACB. And so I started going to the ACB conventions because a lot of people from IBM were at the ACB conventions, which was a good thing. So I got to meet a lot of people from IBM that were blind. And I became a member of VISTA at the time, which was Visually Impaired Secretaries and Transcriptionists or whatever it was. And I was on was on that board for a while. And then, so I got involved then. And, you know, it's one of the best things I've ever done in my life is get involved with ACB. And I will tell you this, backing up, that I got a degree in radio, TV, and film from KU. And I had a great advisor. And he worked for a company called Frank Magid, which is still around. And they developed Good Morning America, and he was part of that project. And he took a sabbatical and taught at KU. And so he started his own company, his own research company, and I went to work for him. And it was incredible. I mean, I got to do a lot of different things. I worked with a country station in Kansas City and helped them choose their music and all that, and research and all that kind of thing. But what I will tell you is I also went to the country radio seminar when I was a senior in college because my advisor, Ernie, was taking a job with Cox Broadcasting, and there was a conflict and he had to go to Atlanta. So I was the one that was on the panel regarding research, and it was supposed to be him. So I got to do a lot of really interesting things. And then when I got out of college, reality hit the fan, may I say. And, I had, I'm telling you, I worked at WIL, I worked in research, and the station manager, I was trying to get a job as music director because the person who had the job went to another city. And in fact, he's still a really good friend of mine to this day. And so I did the interview, and the guy had the nerve to say to me, "Well, if you weren't blind, I'd give you the job."
Mm-hmm.
And this happened a lot during that time. And so Terry, my husband, got the job as music director. And he will tell everyone that I hated him the first month because I wanted that job. and he totally understood that, he still does. But anyway.
Now, were you married at the time?
No.
Oh, okay.
No.
Okay.
So anyway, I decided, this is not working for me. I need to get out of, I need to do something else. And that's when I went to work for IBM. So that's kind of that whole process. Hmm. But with ACB, I was chair. Let's see, what did I do? I said I was on the Vista board. I also was on the scholarship committee. Otis Stevens called me and asked me to be a part of that. And anyway, so on that, with that committee, I became chair of the undergraduate committee and did that for I don't know how many years. And so back then they would send you, a whole box full of information to go through, for each candidate. Anyway, so I did that. And I also was on the board for ACB for one term. I served on the International Relations Committee for a long time and just got off of that. I did a lot of stuff. I was also on the hiring committee for executive director at one point, did that. Just different things, with ACB that I got involved in.
Yeah, when did you get involved with MCB?
I actually was involved with MCB in the 80s because of Jenny Ekus. Mm-hmm. And so I was on the scholarship committee for MCB back then. And then what happened was I ended up getting a job with Rehabilitation Services for the Blind. And I had to, really consciously, I really had to step away from MCB because I was a supervisor. And I felt that I needed to not be affiliated because I had to be so careful in my job. And I really did not want the perception that I was going to be going one way or the other. And back then, it was a very turbulent time for RSB being sued for First Amendment, violation of First Amendment rights from the NFB, sued MCB. And so that was a very turbulent time. And a member of ACB from Iowa used to be Kenneth Jernigan's right-hand man when he ran the Iowa Commission and NFB from there. And there was a little situation where NFB was doing, you know, was doing as saying that they had the person who was RSA chair at the time said that they had nothing to do with NFB. Well, I knew better, and we all knew better. And I ended up calling this gentleman and saying, "Hey, can you do me a favor?" And he copied all of these Braille monitors that had her in her articles about her, pictures of her in the Braille monitor and all this. And so when they denied that she had any involvement, they just pulled all that material out and said, "Oh, really?" And anyway, but it happened that we won the lawsuit. And so it was very turbulent at ACB, yeah. MCB. Yeah. So I had to really be careful. And then Denny asked me to be on the strategic plan committee, which to chair that, which I did. After I retired from MCB is when I really got back involved, which is 5 years ago.
From RSB.
RSB, excuse me.
Yeah, that's right.
I got involved with MCB again. Yeah. And like I said, that was about 5 years ago. So,
Chip?
Yeah, so Naomi, when you went to work for the department, RSB, how long did it take you to become district supervisor?
2 years. I was an employment specialist. And in the first year, they were calling me up to Jeff City, asking me whether I would consider being a supervisor. And I said, no, I didn't want to deal with you know, issues as a supervisor at all. I had no desire to do that. And so finally, they were saying how they couldn't find anybody, and they said that the director of RSB, who was Sally Howard at the time, had spoken to the people involved in choosing the district supervisor in St. Louis South. Said, "How can we get Naomi to consider this?" Well, I did. I said, "Okay, I'll do it." Okay, so I did, and so I became a supervisor in 1997. Yes.
Okay. Yeah. Yes. I want to go back. You mentioned that you got a degree in radio, TV, film, and today. You and your husband, Terry, now you co-host a radio program. Is that correct?
Yes.
And can you share a little bit about that?
Oh, yeah. We worked, you know, we've been doing radio now off and on, more than off, since 1988. And we got involved with the community radio station here in town. And they asked us if we could do a bluegrass show. And we said, well, sure. We knew some about bluegrass, but we didn't know nearly as much as we do now. And we ended up doing the show. And we made a lot of money for the station. And it was a great run. We did that for about 5 years. And it was just, we were young. We had the energy to do all sorts of stuff and remotes all over the place. We got involved with some. We ended up going to the International Bluegrass Music Association conference, which at the time was held in Owensboro, Kentucky, and got to know people who were so welcoming. We got involved with that, with IBMA. We were, you know, MCs for their the fan fest that they had at the time, and so we were on some panels and that kind of thing, so we were real involved with them. And then we got a job the station manager at the community station here, he and his wife moved to Columbia, and they were buying a frequency. They were buying a commercial frequency. So anyway, we got involved with, we knew them, and they called us out of the blue and said, do you remember when you told us that, you know, let you know when, if we were looking for a morning team? And they said, we'd be interested in having you to be our morning team. And so anyway, IBM had a big layoff at the time, first one in its history. And so 50% of North America, IBM was laid off. So I was in between things. And so we went and did that. And, you know, I was kind of, you know, it was something I wanted to do. I wanted to be able to say I was part of a morning team, and I was. I will never do that again. Anyway, so we did that for about a year and a half. And of course, then they wanted to take things in a different direction, of course. And the other thing that happened was I had worked on a promotion for the station, and it was a readathon. And I mean, I, you know, we did the work on the readathon. And I mean, I worked so hard on that, and it was a big success. And they were looking for a promotions director, and I went to the station manager again and, you know, tried to get that job. And they hired my intern instead, who was, and that really upset me. And, but anyway, so we came to St. Louis, and that's when I started with RSB. But Terry then became program director for a second time with the community station here. And so we started a show called The Acoustic Edge. And basically that is singer-songwriters, different, and the term is Americana music, which is kind of country, blues, singer-songwriter kinds of stuff. There is an Americana chart and everything. And so we've been doing that now, that show, since 1995. And so now we are doing the show from the Lindenwood University station. We've been doing it there for about 20 years at least. And so people can listen to the show on TuneIn Radio, and it's 89.1 The Wood, or by downloading the KCLC app, or by listening online to 891thewood.com.
The call letters are KCLC?
Correct.
Okay.
And we are on Sundays from 1 to 4. And so it's been a lot of fun.
Do you do that live? Do you do that live?
Yeah, we do it live. We do
it
live.
Wow.
Which is great.
Yeah.
You know, we're still doing it. We have a Facebook page called The Acoustic Edge. We post our playlist up there. We get a lot of nice responses on the web, on the Facebook page. So it's still a lot of fun. And of course we get, you know, we get record service, which is great, as we used to call it. And, so, you know, every Saturday night or so, we are listening to CDs for the next day.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
Well, Naomi, I know you and I have shared on the Missouri Assistive Technology Advisory Council together. I know.
Oh, yes.
You also served on the Governor's Council on Disability at a time that I was not on there. I'm on there now, but unfortunately we weren't able to get on there together.
Right.
And I know you're involved in some other things outside of MCB. Why don't you share with folks the different kind of things that you're involved in?
Okay. Well, as you said, I was on the Missouri Assistive Technology Council for a long time and really enjoyed that. And Chip and I were on that together. And also Governor's Council on Disabilities. I was on that council, and also was involved in hiring their executive director maybe twice. I was on the I was on the CAP or the what is it called now? It's the client assistance program, their parent agency's council. I was on that. And again, a lot of things with MC or ACB over the years at the same time. So now I'm involved with a company called Centene Corporation, which is based here in St. Louis. It is a Medicaid management company. They have, I think they're now up to 30 states that they manage. And so back in 2012, I'm going to say, they started to consider an advisory committee of people with disabilities. And so I was part of that and still am. So it is the Centene National Disability Advisory Council. And so people with disabilities from all over the country, independent living center directors, you know, somebody from the autism spectrum, you know, different disabilities and different occupations serve on this council, and which has been really good. So I now am on their nominating committee, and I'm also on their employment committee. So I have two more years to go in my current term. I've learned a lot about Centene. They also have a state plan here in Missouri, which is called Home State. And so I also did training with Centene on how to interview people with disabilities, and went to Louisiana, went to Baton Rouge and did that, trained people from Georgia, trained people from Home State. So that was really a lot of fun. Did that with Colleen Starkloff, who is the founder of Starkloff Disability Institute here in Missouri or in St. Louis. And so she and I, you know, did a lot of training with Centene. I think, you know, with the size of Centene, we have really pushed for them to hire more people with disabilities into positions. We're working with their ADA team now. And so things are moving forward, which is good to see. But with a company that size, things don't always move as fast as you'd like to see, but things are, you know, we have to keep nudging them along, which is fine. So I'm involved with that. And president of MCB, of course.
And changing directions a little bit, Naomi, you have a guide dog. And what school did you get it from? And what number is this one?
Zito is my dog. He is laying right by me right now. Cute as can be. He is from the Seeing Eye. And he is my third dog from the Seeing Eye. And he is a golden lab mix. And he is just a sweetheart.
Yeah.
And I can say all my dogs, I've loved all my dogs equally. And they all have had different personalities, as Denny, you can attest to.
Yes.
But they all have been wonderful dogs.
Yeah. Mine just came up and nudged my hand. That's why I brought that up, Naomi. He's wanting attention. I'm sitting here.
Daddy. Yes. Yes, I'm sorry.
Yeah, sorry, Chip. Go ahead.
Yeah. How long have you had Vito?
Zito, I have had him now. It'll be 3 years he's 5 years old now. So, yes, it'll be 4 years in at the end of November. So I got my first dog when I was 45 years old. Mm. And, you know, I never, my family never had, you know, animals for long periods of time. I mean, I think we had one dog and we had to, we didn't, that dog didn't last in the household, we'll say. But anyway, I was not a dog person. And people from ACB, when I got my first dog, they could not believe it. It's like, wait a minute, you didn't like dogs. What are you doing with a dog? But it's one of the, and again, another one of those things that, you know, I've been, one of the best things I've ever done is get a dog. And so that worked out really well. And I just love it. I love having a dog.
Yeah, it's, they're great. Just,
they're wonderful.
Yeah, they really are. Chip, ask your final question here, and we'll be closing this out.
Yeah, well, I guess my question would be, is there anything about Naomi Sewell that maybe people really don't know about? But boy, once you tell us, then we'll say, wow. Yeah, wow, I never knew that. Is there anything about Naomi that you'd like to share?
Well, let's see. My husband says, you don't know what it's like being married to a blind clothes horse. the other thing I would say, and it came across my mind when you were talking, when you asked the question, is I met Bob Dylan, and I was at his I was at his daughter's wedding.
Oh wow! Wow!
That's pretty.
Yes.
Yeah.
It was an experience. Let's put it that way.
Where was that anyway? Where was that, by the way?
Well, the wedding, well, what happened was this family that our family's been friends with forever when we lived in Minneapolis, and their son, his name is Peter Himmelman, was a recording artist. He had a contract with Epic, and he is an excellent musician. Anyway, he was down here when, you know, they were playing here, and we went out for dinner with him, and he mentioned that he was going to be meeting Bob Dylan's daughter, Maria. And the next thing we knew, you know, he was engaged to her. Well, Terry and I were at a Bob Dylan concert at the time, the night that they got engaged. So at this event, you know, he was... we were invited to the reception and everything, and it was me, my mom, and dad that were invited. And so anyway, I wanted to meet him, and you know, so we went up and shook his hand, and I told him that, you know, I was at his concert the night that Maria and Peter got engaged. And he goes, so how was I? Now, I really didn't tell him what I thought, and I said, oh, you're great. What are you going to say?
Yeah, really.
So I met all of his, you know, his, at the time, his mom, his cousins, his lawyer, and all these people. Well, I had a cane at the time, and so I was, you know, talking to some other people. He comes over to me, and he starts putting his hand on my arm and going, yeah, you're okay. And I go, excuse me? Okay. So, you know, I kind of have a little different view, yeah, may I say. Really. Yeah. But what I was going to say about Peter is that Peter is a very observant Jew. And so the records that he puts out are very spiritual, but they are, you know, put out, you know, he's Jewish. And so his outlook is, you know, about, you know, the Jewish religion and everything, but he has just, his music is just beautiful. So that's what I can tell you about that.
Yeah. All right. As we close this out, Naomi, is there anything that you'd like to share with us that you didn't get to talk about?
I don't think so.
Okay.
I think I've covered everything, but thank you for having me.
You bet. Appreciate you agreeing to do this. We've had a lot of good guests on here.
I know you have.
A lot of good response to this, and I know this will not be any exception. You'll be well received. So
I am a regular listener.
Good deal.
Good.
Yeah.
And folks, if you have somebody that you would like to have Chip and I interview, please let us know. My phone number is 636-428-1500, and Chip's is
417-540-9703.
And thank you, folks, for listening to Meet the People of MCB. Be sure and join us next time. You might even hear yourself. Thank y'all. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.